You're listening to the Tumbling Saber Podcast, a member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network, which also includes Talk Star Wars, Generation X-Wing, and the Rogue Squadron Podcasts. Visit StarWarsCommonwealth.com and take your first step into a larger world. Hey everybody, welcome back to episode 48 of the Tumbling Saber Podcast. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us once again. And let me introduce the team. Let's get into this quickly because we got another full show for you. Corey, what's going on?
What is going on, Kyle?
Everything's going on as usual. James, how you doing, my friend?
Up to my elbows in pumpkin guts, Kyle, but doing terrific.
Yeah. I think we've all been there, done that this week. Let's start there. Corey, you kicked this off last week in sort of a very haphazard way with your 4,000 character long hashtag, but the Star Wars Commonwealth Pumpkin Carving Contest. Why don't you bring us all up to speed? How did that go?
It actually went a lot better than I had thought. We're going to learn things from this and hopefully it becomes an annual thing. And yeah, I mean, it went pretty well. We got a total of 18 pumpkin submissions by, I think, 12 different people. And Ads and I tallied up the votes today. We had a look at all of them. And the winners have been decided. And let's just get straight to the winners. All right, so we had 18 pumpkin submissions from 12 people, I think. And Ads and I went over today, and here's what we came up with. He wasn't too keen on this, but best effort goes to Ads for his, I'm dubbing it Darth Bell, because his...
Nice.
Well, he attempted his Darth Vader, but it was a learning experience for him, and it kind of caved in on him. So you'll see that with tomorrow. It just looks like a bell, like Vader's helmet. It's kind of cool. At least he tried. You know, he had fun doing it with his sons, so...
The first thing we got to say is this is not easy.
No, it's not. It really isn't.
To do an intricate... Really, I mean, sometimes you see these pumpkins floating around on Twitter, and there's different shades of orange as people shave away different layers or varying layers of the pumpkin. It is not easy, man.
Oh yeah,
it takes a lot of work and a lot of attention to detail that, frankly, I don't have the patience for.
Yeah,
well, carry on, yeah, Corey.
Time and patience. Okay, so Ad's got best effort. The most classic and best use of seeds is going to Josh from our pal over at Gen X-Wing.
Best use of seeds?
Yeah, that's going to several people. Best cat? Best cat is going to Randomitable. Best Rebels submission goes to Shauna Rust for her Loth cat.
That was awesome.
Yeah, I saw that one. Very cool.
She is, like, talk about going off the reservation and really... pulling a rabbit out of the hat. A Loth cat as a pumpkin carving is awesome.
Indeed. Yeah, I was actually thinking of doing one, but there's no stencils or anything out there, and I said, I'm just not attempting it. And also, I just want to give a quick shout out to her as well. Like, she's done something for Inktober, I think, every day this month, and they're all gorgeous. Like, if you guys check her page, her profile, at Shauna Rust, I think. Really,
I do follow her, and she's always up to something.
Yeah.
And she's... Yeah, very, very talented girl.
All right, so moving on, we got best Star Wars vehicle depiction is Stacy White. Best scene depicted in Star Wars was Darth Mistress, and that was a wicked scene of Luke and Vader and Jedi.
And wait, someone put a scene on a pumpkin?
Yeah.
Like my idea of pumpkin carving is a face. Someone put a scene?
Yeah, him and Vader going toe to toe. That classic scene that's on the t-shirts, you know, where Luke's kind of like lunging at him in a way.
Wow. Okay.
And also Stacy White, jeez. I just want to say she pulled off a Death Star. So that was
nice.
Kind of cool.
Yeah, I saw some wild Death Star pumpkins out there.
All right. So next prize goes out to Steven Geo and friends and family for most fun had and family affair. They had some cool ones. His fiance had the a Ghostbuster symbol. he did a Stormtrooper mask, and I think one of them was from Jack from The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, they get full marks for turning it into an entire social affair, taking it up a notch or two and getting friends involved. Yeah. That's really what it's all about.
Exactly.
I mean, never mind just trying to get people to partake in a hashtag on Twitter. Get some protein form humans with you and carve up some pumpkins. So that's doing it right for me.
Agreed.
Got it. That's exactly what it was about. So next one is Best Bounty Hunter and Character Depiction goes to Rob at Gen X-Wing.
I'm just going to put this out there. It sounds like there's a lot of nepotism going on here, but go on.
All right. We got the next one is, you're going to like this one. The European Intercontinental Champion is Rob from TSW. His girlfriend actually carved
this. I'm just going to throw this out there. It sounds like there's a lot of nepotism going on here.
Yeah, that's fine. Everybody's a winner.
Did I say that already?
You know, Kylie, no, it's not that it's nepotism. It's that they have 18 pumpkins, so they came up with 18 awards.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody deserves something.
Exactly. So
Do I get the award for not participating?
Yeah, well,
there's
pretty
no
much.
Award for that.
I get something by doing nothing.
Yeah, don't worry, Kyle. You're on the list. Right at the end here.
Oh, boy.
Bomb.
All right.
Yeah. They're going to call my name.
All right. Next is
I'm gonna get mom on the line so she can hear what prize I win. She'll be so proud.
Yeah, you get nothing. De nada. All right. So next one is
as usual.
Most original times two, and again, best use of seeds goes to my good friend James O'Flaherty for his awesome Gord Downey depiction and Optimus pumpkin.
Wait. Did you say Gord Downey?
Yeah, Gord Downey. That's what I called him all day today.
Nice.
Oh, that's awesome. That's so funny. I didn't even think of that. Good on you, James.
How many of those do you think are across Canada today?
No,
it's one. The answer is one. James is the only guy that came up with that.
So that was definitely most original, most creative. So, and
actually, James, you know what? You should. I don't. If it's been done, I don't know. But you should take a picture of that, put it on Twitter, name him Gord Downey, and hashtag or tag the hip in the post, and hashtag the hip.
Okay, done.
I think that will get wings.
I'm doing it.
Indeed, James. That was a really, when I saw it, a total mind blown. I said, wow, you hit it out of the park, man. Like, just totally inspired.
Hey, thanks, guys.
All right, so the last award's going to me for most time wasted. And
most wasted?
Well, I put and spent because actually, as Kyle, it was very time consuming and wow, man. Like, it was a lot of effort. My neck was sore after. But I was really proud of it in the long run. And I also took the award home for most liked by Kanan Jarrus. Ooh.
Yeah, Freddie Prinze Jr. gave you your tweet with your pumpkin some love. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was. I spent a lot of time on it. I did a Darth Maul and it was harder. You know, once you take that first carve into it, like, there's no turning back. So again, Kyle had already mentioned in the long run, like, the big winner is, like, everybody. I'm really glad everybody who participated did, and I'm sure you guys all had a good time doing it. So everybody's a winner except for Kyle. But Kyle told me before the show that he did carve a pumpkin, so you're a winner too, Kyle. You just could have taken a picture of it and sent it to me, you know? I would have snuck it in.
You know,
past
I wanted to take a picture because my kids were really the ones. I did most of the work, I suppose. But the kids were also elbow deep in pumpkin guts. But there's one picture that I guess will be forever frozen in my mind. And it's the two of them fighting over the knife. So the picture is a six-year-old and a two-and-a-half-year-old both gripping a knife and both full speed trying to wrench it from each other. And if I had eight arms, one of them at least would be used to take a picture while the other seven separate them safely. But sadly, there's no photographic evidence of this this incident.
Well, once they're
but my wife will vouch for me.
Once they're carved, you could have popped a candle in there. Whatever, we'll see it tomorrow anyway. It was a little too late to submit.
Yeah, maybe.
Anyway, I'm happy you did one with the kids.
The pumpkin I like the best is one I think you guys both saw. Did you see the one I did with my kid? That's like basically she drew my 4.5-year-old drew like. Like a 4.5-year-old does, a squiggly face on a circle. And I transcribed it onto a pumpkin exactly. Did I show you guys that one?
Yeah, I did. I saw it. It's awesome.
That's my favorite pumpkin.
I definitely saw it.
Yeah, I told you.
Definitely had the most fun with that one.
I told you to tell her. Well, good job.
It was a very, like, if you hadn't told me that your daughter had done it, I would have figured that somebody was going for like a Tim Burton look.
It was very Tim Burton-esque. I agree with you on that.
Well, again, thank you to everybody who took part. Corey had a lot of fun with this.
Yeah, well done, Corey and Ads.
Yeah, we did have fun with it. Something, you know, you just got to do it every year. You just got to do it.
Can't wait to see what you come up with for Christmas.
Yeah, seriously, it's right around the corner. You know what I was going
to
do?
At some point, you're going to have to do like a Star Wars-themed snowman contest.
Ooh, excellent idea. Ooh.
I made some...
But using the Japanese platoon of soldiers who did those giant stormtrooper helmets, that's the bar.
Well...
Oof, setting the bar high.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. But no, that's a good idea.
Anyway, thank you again to everybody who participated. And just a quick reminder here, guys, to head over to Kickstarter and check out Carlos Candido's Kickstarter campaign. It's ongoing. There's another week or 10 days or so left. And you hear his music every show here. And we're trying to get his album off the ground, his next EP. And it would be nice if we could help him out and throw a few bucks his way.
Yeah,
I think we've done our part here.
Yeah, I finally kicked some money his way, and it took me all of 26 seconds from start to finish. It really is easy, so just log on and go do it. You'll feel good about yourself.
And with that, we now talk about very quickly here. We last week we released the first episode of Sith Disturbers, the companion podcast here at the Tumbling Saber. And we did get a lot of feedback, so thank you to everybody who listened. You know, we know it's a lot to ask to double dip on us three guys twice a week, but any of the feedback was certainly appreciated, and we love that you guys seem to enjoy the show. And if there's anything you guys think that would be appropriate subject matter for the show or anything you guys want us to touch on, definitely let us know. Don't be shy. It's a show that I think is going to morph and change shape a lot as we go forward here. So you may as well have your say, because whatever you have to say is as good as what we've got. So don't be shy. And now we can talk about actual Star Wars stuff. You know, we're only what, 10 minutes into the show here? It's about time we get into some Star Wars.
Let's do it.
And we start. Yeah, let's do it. Let's start with Michael Giacchino, he of the very pressed schedule. So he's hard at work on the score of Rogue One after being pressed into duty following Alexandre Desplat's, I guess, sudden departure. Once he realized, no, this is too quick for me. But he wants you to know that he's very excited to hear the Jyn Erso theme, which I thought was funny because I'm very excited to hear it. So Corey, are you excited about this soundtrack as much as you would be for any other Star Wars movie?
That's an interesting question. I guess the answer would be no, to be honest. But
there's no wrong answer.
No, I'm very excited to hear this music. Don't get me wrong, but compared to a Saga movie, no. But this time around, it's a bit different too. I'm more anxious to hear it just because it's a new composer, right?
Yeah, Corey, would your answer be different if it was John Williams? Is it because it's not a Saga movie, or because it's not John Williams?
No, I think it's because it's not a Saga movie. I'm very curious.
My answer, my answer's the same as yours, but it's for a different reason. I think I would be as excited if it was John Williams, but I'm not as excited just because, well, it's not as exciting that it's not John Williams.
See, I am excited to hear this. Only because, I mean, I think this is the perfect training ground for the guy who many expect will be the next to take John Williams' spot. And whether or not that's true, I don't know. That's just what a lot of people seem to be repeating. And you know how things can catch fire in terms of a regurgitated opinion on social media. But be it as it may, a lot of people do think this guy is next in line. So I'm anxious to hear how he handles Star Wars. And I think he gets to do it. You can't call anything Star Wars related anonymous, but he does have sort of a protective shell around him to a certain degree, not doing a Saga movie to kick things off. So I think he's got a bit of slack, but I'm still quite excited to hear what he's got in store. And I don't know how quick he's racing along here with the soundtrack, but I think it's pretty clear that the Jyn Erso theme is probably going to be the backbone of the movie, similar to how Rey's theme is definitely the backbone to the Force Awakens soundtrack. I think we can agree with that.
Well, definitely.
Good. I'm glad when people agree. Actually, I'm glad when people disagree too.
It's different this time around, though. Again, though, just because it's the first time that a new guy's taking over, I think that makes me excited. But I don't know. I just can't. I'm definitely excited to get a taste. I think we're getting a taste, right? Of there's going to be a little. He's going to drop a little bit of Jyn steam soon, I heard.
I did not hear that. I'd be surprised.
Really, eh?
I mean, we did hear a tiny sliver of Attack on Jakku Village, I think on 60 Minutes, right before The Force Awakens came out. And I mean, like a tiny sliver, right after the sort of the opening crawl. So I don't know. Maybe we will, but I wouldn't bank on it. I certainly wouldn't put any money on it unless you were getting extraordinary value, like the type of value where if you put $5 on the Indians winning the World Series at the beginning of the year, that type of value.
That's good value, my friend.
Sure is. But yeah, I am excited just because. I mean, I'll play the role of Homer and that I always want to hear new Star Wars stuff. But I also want to, like, I want to hear what this guy's got, because everybody loves this guy. And Doctor Strange came out, or is coming out this week, but I think the soundtrack is already out. And that was doing the rounds on social media this week in Star Wars land. And people were just raving about this soundtrack, saying, see, everybody, this is what we're going to get. This is Michael Giacchino, and this is his style, and I can't wait to see him take on Star Wars. But Corey, I get where you're coming from for sure, because this movie's not going to have anything to do with Jedi, really. And so, okay, let me ask you this. This just popped into my head. Will we hear the Imperial theme or the Imperial March in Rogue One?
I would think so. Why not?
Yes.
I'm on the fence. I don't know. I thematically, it makes sense. As part of the narrative, it makes sense.
Or
maybe we'll hear some a different version of it.
Yeah, like a rehashing of it. Yeah, that makes more sense to me. Like a same, you know what it is, but it's going to be revamped a bit.
Because they brought it in during Attack of the Clones, which I was surprised at the time. I thought they would. I didn't think they would touch it. I thought they would leave that in Empire Strikes Back. But I guess it's one thing when it's all John Williams and he can do what he wants. But that soundtrack is coming out very soon. I guess on the same day as the movie. So I am just a little bit excited for that.
Yeah, I love that. I've grown into that kind of music. Like, I've always liked Star Wars music, but now it's like more and more, I just kind of want to listen to that, you know?
Yeah, and it comes to the point too where you've seen the movies so many times that now when you can watch the movies in your head as you listen to the soundtracks. So
that's true too.
I think that gets to, you know, it's a different level of sort of enjoyment of the music too, right?
Yeah, which is exactly my commutes to work. It's the Star Wars soundtracks. The kids demand it. And especially with The Force Awakens, they're getting so good with identifying music and applying it to a scene, saying, oh, this is where this happens. And even Carter, 2.5 years old, who doesn't always watch The Force Awakens when I have it on, but he can identify, oh, there's Rey's theme. Oh, there's Kylo Ren. He knows.
That's so cool.
Yeah, they're amazing like that.
Oh, quick aside. This is hilarious. I had The Force Awakens on today while he was napping. And then he came, you know, stumbling down the stairs. And it was right as the movie was starting. So I don't know if the music woke him up or whatnot. But he came in just as Captain Phasma enters the Jakku village slaughter. And he goes, uh-oh, mommy stormtrooper mad.
That's so funny.
I thought that was hilarious. He called Phasma mommy stormtrooper.
That's, well,
it's quite perceptive, actually.
Yeah, it's truly beautiful, the child of a mind is, or the mind of a child is.
I think you said it perfectly the first time, Corey.
Yeah, something like that.
So we got some new titles for some Rebels episodes, and I'll be frank, I read them and I got nothing out of them. I can't really say, oh, well, this must clearly be that, which had been easier to do in previous seasons. So I don't know if they're being more cryptic in their writing or if I'm just a dope. And you guys don't have to answer that. But let's go through them here quickly if we can. Starting with episode 7, Imperial Super Commandos. And I bet you there's a lot of Star Wars fans out there that weren't aware that there was no Rebels this weekend. Corey, were you aware, or were you kind of...
No, I was prepped. I was prepped. I'm on the Rebels recon.
I was half expecting a panic text message from you last night saying, where's Rebels? What's going on?
Well, I did expect them to at least air an episode at that time slot, and they didn't. So I was kind of disappointed there.
Well, I mean, your broken heart will mend, I'm sure.
Yeah, whatever. Okay, the Habs won.
The Habs keep winning. Two things real quick before you guys dive into too much. I'm gonna break away and put the pot on while you guys finish this particular question, because I think you're going to have to talk about Rebels in general, and I'm not caught up. So, but I will say this. I'll warn everybody, including you guys, if you guys PVR or record Rebels, next week's the time change. So make sure you're on the ball for that, eh?
Yes, that is a good public service announcement for everybody out there.
Yeah.
Make sure your PVRs understand time changes.
All right, boys, enjoy the next 3 minutes of this particular question, and I'll catch up with you in a minute.
All right. So we've all seen previews of this, Corey. Imperial Super Commandos, after losing contact to the Protectors of Concord Dawn, Sabine, Ezra, and Fenn Rau investigate. They quickly discover that Imperial Mandalorians have taken over the station. So it appears that some Mandos have joined ranks with the Empire, as we saw in the preview.
Which looks no surprises so there. Cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're all dressed in white, and they look like those old-school Macquarie concept Boba Fett figures. The ones that are worth an absolute mint now.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that one. And then the following week, we have Ezra and Sabine join forces to subdue a young ace pilot and his crew who are foolishly risking their lives. That is the only way they can defend their home. That episode entitled Iron Squadron. And then, again, here they are referring to a young ace pilot and his crew. Are we supposed to know who these people are? Are they cheekily pointing at somebody here? You got any thoughts on that?
I thought the exact same thing as you. I thought maybe yes. You know, if it seems like he's a bad guy. So, but I did think the same thing. Maybe it's someone who we might be familiar with. I love the name Iron Squadron. But the only thing I'm really seeing so far is just that they're going to start fleshing out a Sabine Ezra storyline.
Yeah, they do throw those two together a couple times in what we're going to see here. And then episode 9, entitled The Winkatu Job, the Rebels join forces with ruthless pirates to salvage a freighter full of weapons the Rebellion needs. However, the mission turns out way more dangerous than they expected.
Ooh, sounds like Hondo's involved.
Well, that was the first thing that came to my mind. And I figured, you know, 90% of people who watch Rebels would probably think the same thing. But why not just say Hondo? He's not a secret anymore. He's on the show half the time now. So Rebels joined forces with Hondo and his pirates. Like, I think this is somebody else.
I want it to be a surprise. Like, yeah, Hondo's in the episode, you know? Like,
well, it's not a surprise when Hondo joins in anymore. It's welcome when he's there.
Yeah, most welcome. So I'd rather it almost... Just, you know, don't leave it in there. Let's speculate about it. Could be Visago too, you know.
Oh yeah, I'm not a big Visago fan.
Me neither. Hondo's the man.
And then episode 10, An Inside Man, looking for information on a new Imperial weapon. Ezra and Kanan break into an Imperial factory on Lothal. However, they have to trust an enemy to escape from a building that is about to be locked down. Sounds a little bit like Rogue One.
Not little, eh? Sounds like sounds like the whole Fulcrum Callus thing might be getting flushed out maybe a bit. Maybe not, but I can't see.
Absolutely, yeah. I was thinking who's trust an enemy to escape. Yeah, that's certainly sounds like Callus. I think I like that call. Looking for information on a new Imperial weapon. You think they're talking about the Death Star, and this is somehow loosely connected to Rogue One? Because think about it. This is coming out in about a month from now, which will be awfully close to Rogue One. You think they're dovetailing them together somehow?
That's very possible. I mean, we've already seen it, right? Over Geonosis? Like, like the pre, whatever is left over from the staging of building the Death Star. We're led to believe that anyhow in a previous episode. So I totally think it makes sense. Who knows how much we'll actually find out if, you know, I could see it being more in the sense that they don't know by the end of the episode, but we as the fans would know what it is.
Yeah.
You know?
And then finally, visions and voices. Haunted by visions of Maul, Ezra has to journey across the galaxy. Upon arriving at his destination, he has to participate in a strange ritual to sever his connection to Maul. It sounds like we're getting right back to the most compelling aspect of this season, which is the Ezra Maul angle.
No,
a strange ritual. That sounds like the Star Wars version of an exorcism.
Well, it looks like we saw that in the trailer. But before we get there, Kyle, I just want to ask you, do you know if this is, like, when this episode's done, is the show going on hiatus for a bit? Or?
They usually do take a mid-season break that lasts. Well, remember back to last year when The Force Awakens came out. Rebels stopped about a week before and then resumed again, what, in February, I want to say? So I would imagine, again, it's going to give Rogue One time to breathe and then come back in the late winter.
Interesting, yeah.
Or summer, if you're in Australia. I don't want to be too isolationist here. No. This is a global show.
So I think this is going to be a big one. I hope it's an hour-long episode, if anything. And I think it's going to stem back to some of what we've seen in the trailer where, you know, again, those green spirits or ghosts of Dathomir possibly appear, like, the voice that's inside the holocron might make an appearance, and looks like Kanan at one point gets in the way. Or it looks like everybody gets infected by this green substance, because, I mean, you see Kanan has it in his eyes, and so does Sabine at one point, right? In some of the trailers. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting way to end mid-season, that's for sure. They're going to leave us on a cliffhanger, as usual.
Well, you see, what's interesting is that nothing here about the twin sons. Nothing here that points to the fact that they might be heading to Tatooine at any point. So it looks like that particular angle will be the season 3 climax.
Exactly. Oh, for sure.
And whether or not they bring Obi-Wan back, that will be the end of season 3.
No, it's to be expected for sure. I'm happy about that too. Like, I'm glad that this is the way the season is going to end. Like, this mid-season is going to end, that Maul's back in the picture. Because the rest of the episodes prior really seem, again, like character development, storyline development between characters.
Yeah, everybody's... Well, you know, Zeb didn't get his own little slice here. Like, Zeb didn't even get mentioned in these little synopses here.
No, but they're very rough, bare-bones stuff, too, still.
Yeah, well, that's true.
I could see maybe the Win Cathu job? Maybe he'll have a big, prominent role in that.
Yep, that's fair enough. All right, well, that's in lieu of a Rebels review this week. There, you still get a little taste of Rebels news from the Tumbling Saber guys. And that, of course, we got that from makingstarwars.net, who got it from Jedi Bibliotech. And it's Florian on I forget his Twitter handle, but he does a great job of disseminating news out of Germany. And translating what needs to be done so that us dull normals over here who speak English can read it. So again, thanks to the great bastion of Star Wars news at Making Star Wars for helping us out this week.
That was awesome. I'm glad. I love getting those little tidbits, you know, because for the most part, they don't really spoil too much. And it's nice to have a little direction as to where we're going.
All right, let's move on from that. Let's get into this topic that we all found so fascinating. So recently there was a post on a website called Force Material, and they touched on a theory that's been kicking around of Rey as a clone. And I think it's something that we've all kind of talked about at once, whether it's, is Rey a reincarnation of Anakin? Is she a clone of Anakin? That's all been kind of hacked up to pieces and put back together again. A lot of it gets dismissed as you know, typical fan rubbish. But this particular writer, and I don't have his name, but anyway, forcematerial.com. Check that out. It should be right near the front page. and it's about a movie, a 70s era thriller called The Boys from Brazil. And it plays off actual events from history where Nazi officers, after the war, took off to Latin America. So Argentina, Brazil, a lot of countries where they could just go underground and hide. And of course, I've never seen this movie, but I might make a point of it now. But it's a fairly lengthy post, but we'll try and cover it as well as we can here, given our relative time constraints. James, you're back in the seat here?
Yes, sir.
All right. So we all kind of read this post, and at the end of it, we're like, damn, this is good. Like, what were your initial thoughts after reading this whole thing?
All right. Well, it's no secret to anybody who's listened to this show before that I've been pretty hard on the Rey has to be Kylo Ren's sister, half-sister, for no other reason other than I couldn't think of a storyline that was more compelling. And, you know, beyond backstory, beyond what fans who have much more information than I, you know, who want to argue with me, I know that they're going to write a very compelling story. So until this theory, I was really strong on they must be siblings. But this was the first, after reading this, I thought, this might be more compelling. If she is somehow cloned from Skywalker genes and is what Kylo so desperately wants to be genetically, she is, you know, Vader, basically, then that might be more compelling. It might get me off of my they have to be siblings theory.
Yeah, isn't that a great angle? That Rey, unbeknownst to herself, is what Kylo wants to be so badly. That is amazing storytelling. Corey, what were your first thoughts?
Oh man, when I read this thing, like, you know, like I read a lot of like blogs and posts and stuff, but this one just got the hamster wheel turning. Like right off the bat, I said this is compelling, intriguing, so well written. Like really good props to these guys. Like these guys take you down the rabbit hole. Like it's honestly like through the looking glass stuff, man. Like anyone listening should really read this thing because it's just so well written. So yeah,
No, this is the opposite, the polar opposite of stupid fan theory of the week.
Yeah. Like this is just so well thought
out. A lot of homework was done here, and it just makes so much sense, and a lot of evidence presented too.
Yeah, like there's so much stuff that he mentioned. Like it's interesting too because right now on History Channel they're airing a show called I think it's Finding Hitler. So they're going over all this stuff of how these former SS soldiers and stuff escaped to Brazil and these countries. And they themselves were actually cloning or trying to clone, you know, like Hitler's DNA with, I think, that's in the movie. I don't know if they did this for real, but in the movie they have like 60 or 90 children that are all over the world with his genes, you know, and that was their master plan. So this,
yeah, for sure.
This whole thing just really, he ties it all together. Just even the speculation wise of, you know, J.J. Abrams from things he said and who he hangs out with and the influences that he said he's taken from to make The Force Awakens. This guy really took it a step further and did his homework.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the holy grail of The Force Awakens / Rey inspiration, or just the biggest coincidence of all time, which I think would be absurd.
I was thinking about this too, though. There's this gorgeous piece of fan art that I had actually sent to James, like, because I remember when you sent us the article, my mind was blown again. So I said, James, you read this? He was like, yeah, I perused it. I was like, dude, like, check this out. You have to read this. And like there was that because you had asked a question and there was that, it was a fan art picture of looks like some kind of bounty hunter handing like this preserved hand of Luke, basically, you know, to some Imperial person. And it's just so gorgeous. And it won a piece of it won some kind of award. So
like a real award or like a Star Wars Commonwealth Pumpkin Contest award.
Like a real,
hey!
We're all winners in that, Kyle. You're just jealous because you didn't get your photo in by 1500.
No, I failed. I'll take my lumps.
What's nice too about this theory, not only does it have some, you know, great historical relevance and tie-ins, but it fits so well into the Star Wars universe. Like, cloning is something that we're all super familiar with. The technology is something they don't have to explain or spend 1 minute of screen time on. It's just something that we accept that they can do easily. And so why not? What, if you've got this off-the-chart metachlorine super force-using DNA, why not clone it if you can? Why not find a way to clone it?
James, like, yeah, I got to ask you guys this, because when I was pondering the question, I said to myself, like, the only little, like, thing I'm going to nag on a bit is, yes, we know they have cloning technology and whatnot. Why would no one have ever cloned Jedis or people with the Force prior? Sith, you know, you would think the Sith, you know, there's a rule of two or whatever, but don't you think they might want to, instead of having a clone army, wouldn't they have wanted, like, a Sith Force user army? Like, maybe it has been done in past, you know, like, thousands of years prior. Who knows? Maybe we'll find out, but just that kind of thing.
I'll bark up that tree with you for a second. I didn't see it exactly the same way, but my sort of only hole in the theory was, like, why one? Like, why, if you're going to clone Vader or Luke, why not clone, you know, why not do, like, I don't know, 1,000 in case one doesn't work out? In case you lose one on a desert planet or something, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's sort of the thing from that movie, right? Where they had Hitler clones, quote unquote, scattered across the globe. So maybe there are more rays that across the galaxy.
That is super interesting.
Ooh, true.
I mean, that's a hell of an angle to introduce at this point.
But if concurrent, this is what I was trying to get at before too, Kyle. If confirmed correct in the long run, this theory, it's going to give a lot of credence to the name Tumbling Saber. Wouldn't you think? If it's all based on that one hand being found.
Well, the deleted scene that was cut is of the table, the hand still somehow holding onto Luke's lightsaber.
Rigor mortis.
But as it enters the atmosphere of whatever planet, the hand burns away. So nobody ever got their hand on the hand, so to speak. It was always only about the saber.
Well, even if someone does find it, it tumbled through space at one point. And still...
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it would. It definitely would give some. It certainly would spell out where the name of the show came from. And but one of the things we asked ourselves was, okay, so if Rey is a clone of Anakin, where did the DNA come from?
Yeah.
And we figured, well, there's plenty of opportunities for that. It could have been taken. Anakin left half an arm on Geonosis. Maybe it was scavenged from there. Or Palpatine would have had plenty of access to it while encasing him in the Vader armor. So that isn't the issue.
Or he could have even just straight up, like, told Vader, like, give me some of your blood. I'm going to maybe clone you one day. And Vader would have been like, yes, my lord.
Yeah, exactly. That's the way Morris saw it. Like, he pretty much operated on
Lord Vader, pee in this cup.
Well, I would think when he transformed him, too, he would have been able to gain ample tissue sample from his scarred corpse.
Yeah, exactly. But I always felt like Palpatine could have been the one to have influenced Anakin's birth to begin with, or Plagueis did it. And then following that train of thought forward, Snoke would know. And especially if Snoke ends up being Gallius Rax from Aftermath, then it's a very simple leap to think that Gallius Rax now knows this technology, and especially being the guy in charge of whatever facility was underground on Jakku that we have yet to learn about, you could see how these things all start tying together even a little bit.
Oh, yeah, they tie together a lot. When Palpatine says, the rumor that he knew how to create and save life, I don't know the exact line, Kyle, you can probably quote it better than I just did, but manipulating and create life, save life and create life. Well, if he was talking about, you know, Anakin, and then so you've created the perfect Jedi or Sith, then why wouldn't you clone the thing that you created that's perfect? Like, it ties it all together almost too perfectly.
Yeah, and there's more. I mean, part of the theory of this was that you wanted to... They want to raise Rey in such a way that you replicate as many of Anakin's... or you want to replicate Anakin's upbringing as much as possible, including all his environment. So here she is growing up on a desert planet, just like Anakin did.
I hate sand.
I wanted to bring up something about this. I was in my garage yesterday, and I had a thought about this. So do you think it's possible that if she's cloned and they can like test for metachlorine, that they like weren't happy with the result, and so that's why they sent her to this planet to recreate the circumstance, and or something about that planet itself maybe charges her up? Like we've had these sort of theories that maybe some planets are particularly special. So like, do you think that it's possible that if she's cloned, it didn't work out perfectly, and so they like adapted the plan and sent her down to like make her more like Anakin in the end? You know what I'm saying?
Maybe. More and more I think about it, that, you know, I had a theory at one point, or it wasn't my theory, but I was almost convinced at one point that she's actually from Act Two, based on the Rey is a incarnation of the first Jedi. Remember that old theory we talked about a couple months ago? And now we have, you know, Rey is a clone of Anakin. So she seems to be a replica of somebody.
It's not even so much a clone of Anakin as it is just Skywalker DNA, because they would get their hands on Luke's DNA, more or less, would be the speculation that was written about in the article anyhow.
Yeah, you're right. That's true. But you know, one of the things I think is interesting is that in the novel, the Force Awakens novel, Snoke goes on this little soapbox about how Vader's only flaw was one moment of sentimentality. You know, the love for his son bit him in the arse, and that's when he tossed Palpatine over the side, and that's what kind of ruined his otherwise perfect life. And so if you're trying to recreate...
You know, that could be taken in two ways too, Kyle. I was thinking about that. That could be taken in two ways, in the sense that that one moment of sentimentality, in the sense that he had children.
Well, that's what I mean. His sentimentality, his love for his children is what screwed him up and made him choose the light over the dark.
But like more like his love for Padme.
Of that too. And all that stuff, it all stems from attachments, whether it's people you're introduced to or people that you're born with.
But it goes back.
So let's breed that out of Rey and have her grow up alone. So she has no attachments, none. And which would then beg the question of, well, who's this family she keeps talking about that are coming back for her? Is that an actual memory she has? Is it an implanted thing in her mind in order to engender mistrust and hate that somebody actually completely left her alone for her entire life? And that she would never trust anybody, and thereby helping to make her a vessel for dark side tendencies. I don't know, but a lot of these things, the more we go, the more it lines up.
For sure. That's why it's so well thought out. But just on another note, like touching back on what James had said a second ago about her being dumped there for alternate reasons, it kind of got me thinking a second ago, like maybe because she's a girl and not the, like, to them, in their eyes, she wasn't a man and not the ideal, like, replacement for Vader. They possibly dump her there. And then, you know, eventually she shows them who's boss.
Interesting.
Interesting, I guess. I can't see them ever saying, well, she was a weak female, so we ditched her. I mean,
they haven't set that up in canon. Like, there have been, like, powerful female Jedi. A chauvinist order. Well, we haven't seen any female Sith, have we?
Oh, keep watching Rebels. Just keep on watching Rebels.
Okay.
We haven't necessarily seen them, but.
Well, there's more Sith ladies in what's that? The Clone Wars. My goodness, than so far in Rebels at any point. But again, here's another thing that ties together. Corey, you'll learn as once you get into the Ahsoka novel, the whole Kyber crystal thing.
I've already read the spoiler on now. That. It's amazing. Oh, if you want to touch upon it now, wow, it's beauty, James.
I know what it is.
No, we're not going too far off the reservation with this. We're staying the course.
All right.
But the Kyber crystals call out with its own unique song to a unique Jedi, a unique Force user. And unless that crystal is destined to be yours, you'll never hear it. And as you'll see in the Ahsoka novel, you won't even see it.
Yep.
So it's interesting that the crystals within Anakin's lightsaber call out to her, which could only, I mean, you can deduce that the crystal would be calling out to a Skywalker. Now, she's a Skywalker by DNA. Again, another piece of the puzzle slots into place here. So a lot of this just lines up so neatly.
Well, that's very important. Very, very important. Like, you had touched upon this, James. I think you had made the reference or the analogy to, we both had, I don't know if it's either you or I, but Harry Potter and the wands, right? Like, each mm-hmm. wand is specifically selected to the student. So, super interesting. Like, oh, man. That's kind of, like, blowing my mind a bit when I read that. I haven't read the book, but, oh, man, so cool.
When... We'll talk about this later, but the way the Sith make why the Sith always have red lightsabers? Are you up to date on that, Corey?
Yeah, it's fleshed out in the book. I read the spoiler on it. You?
Yeah, I listened to Star Wars this week, and they talked about it, so I'm up to date.
So cool.
Yeah, they just bend the crystal to its will, which kind of makes the crystal bleed in a way. It's a really cool song. Thing that
but they have to kill a
here.
Jedi to get it, right? There's no crystals calling out to the Sith.
Right. They're all kind of stolen crystals, exactly. And again, so we look at the character of Rey. She's a tough survivor, a skilled pilot, ace mechanic, all things that Anakin and Luke are. And maybe not Luke because I'm the tough survivor at that point, but you get the point. They all have these common traits, and they all come from common environments, so to speak. It's hard to argue against this theory at this point.
It really, really, really is. Especially the Kyber crystal thing, though, because like you'd said, the book spells it out that, you know, they called people for reason, and you know, it calls to her. Like, Kylo Ren's a Skywalker in a sense as well, but he's dark, so it won't go to him, right?
Well, yeah, and, you know, talking about Kylo, we touched on it at the beginning of this conversation, but there's a line in The Force Awakens where Kylo is probing Rey's thoughts. He's trying to learn. He's trying to read the map through her thoughts, but she pushes back and she says, "You're afraid that you'll never be as strong as Darth Vader." And if this whole theory pans out, boy, how does that particular line take on a new effect? Where she's not saying you'll never be as strong as Darth Vader. She's in essence saying you'll never be as strong as me.
Oh, it's great.
Not only that,
it's like,
that's compelling. That's the I am your father moment. No, I am Darth Vader, you know?
Well, it's a hint at it. And it's a hint of where, you know, again, it's a hint that Rey could choose a dark path. We can all see a movie where Rey at least flirts with it. And I think that's sort of a given for anybody in her position. But
yeah, I like any movie where Rey flirts, that's for sure.
She would just say it's none of your business. And it opens up thematically an entire thing of nature versus nurture, right? So are you who your genes say you are, or can you choose beyond what your environment has shaped you to be?
I think it's clear I think it's clear that I'm not who my genes say I am, because my name's not Levi's. And second dad joke, got one in. But I do have a couple problems with this Rey theory. Small ones, but if this is like a plan, boy, did they do a bad job of protecting their investment. Like, they had like what, Unkar Plutt, that fat dude who was basically useless and mean. That was that's who was watching her. Like, it seems to me like you would do a better job.
There's some explaining to do there, right?
Yeah, definitely.
They've got to really explain if they're just going to say, well, she's going to either make it on her own, or we're just going to pull out, you know, sample number two and throw this one out into the desert and see how she does.
Yeah, maybe if there's a whole bunch of clones, then maybe that would explain it. But if she's unique, then you'd think they would have spent a little bit more time and energy looking after her and developing her. I don't know.
Wait, can you imagine a scene where Rey accesses some, whether it's a Force vision or some sort of secret facility in episode 8 or 9, and she sees a bunch of Bacta tanks with a bunch of young versions of herself? Number one, number two, like, or she's, you know, she might be number one, she might be number 8. They just keep failing. But there's a whole bunch of them just kind of in a suspended animation state. And if she fails, well, just line up the next one.
Creepy.
So
touching back, Kyle, just, I think this is important too, just to the conversation. You just mentioned something about a secret facility, and Jakku is the... There was something happened there, right? Where there was a huge battle that where the Empire was protecting some kind of secret research facility. With at all costs, they protected this thing so much so that, from what the story reads or the article reads, is they used their tractor beams to pull the Republic ships down from space and crash on the planet. They were so desperate to escape with this information from Jakku. And the secret.
Well, and prevent it from falling into Republic hands.
Exactly. So that's got to be quite relevant to what we're talking about here as well.
For sure. And that book comes out, Empire's End, the third and final chapter in Chuck Wendig's trilogy, comes out early 2017. And that's going to be one to read for sure. That's going to have a ton of interesting stuff in the lead up to episode 8 in it, for sure. But let's put a bow. So before we put a bow on that, are you guys convinced? Is this where we're going? And part B, is it a mistake if they don't go that way?
It's not a mistake, but it's just so well thought out. And the way this guy has taken what J.J. Abrams himself has said, it would not surprise me. And there's a good chance we've all been spoiled already.
James, what do you think? Is this a mistake if they go elsewhere now, given how compelling and well thought out this could be?
No, definitely not a mistake. I think this is excellent. Don't get me wrong. And I'm not wearing a hat because I hung it on this theory. But you could, if you spend enough time thinking about it, you could build, I'd say, half a dozen theories that sound as good. You could build one where she's a Kenobi. You could build one where she's a Skywalker, and we've talked about all of them, and we've all sort of been strong on them for a while. So there's ways to look at all the information we have and build more than one really plausible theory. So I don't think it's the only one. I don't think it's a mistake if it turns out that they're half siblings or cousins or some other, that she's not a clone. I don't think that's a mistake. Although, like I said, I'm hooked.
Yeah, no, this is good. I was never big on the incarnation/clone thing. I just thought that was kind of lazy. I didn't want them to go, drawing parallels with the Matrix or really going too deep down religious road. But this one's good. This is really good. And I think I'd be pretty happy if this is the avenue they chose. But again, like you said, we could probably, or somebody else could, I couldn't. Piece together something really good for Kenobi or for somebody else.
I think you could.
All right, let's put a pin in that. Let us know your thoughts out there, everybody. If you're buying the hype here, are you hooked as we are that Rey is a clone of Skywalker DNA? Have your say. Let us know.
Or in the least, just read and the article to expand your own mind.
Yeah, I will link to the article on the blog page. But if you don't want to go check the blog page, which I don't know why you wouldn't want to do that. Come on. Forcematerial.com. And with that, we will check in with the Knight of the Commonwealth known as Ads. Let's hear what he has to say in this week's edition of Ads Edition. Here we go.
Hello, chaps. Happy Halloween to one and all. Hope everyone is good. A couple of questions this week. So the first one is Halloween related. And I wonder what your Halloween costume of choice would be. And the second one is one that relates to Star Wars film promo posters. And I'd like to know from all of the previous Star Wars films that you remember, which is the one Star Wars poster that springs to mind? For me, the only one I think I've ever bought was back in my uni days before The Phantom Menace came out, and it was the one with a small Anakin, and the shadow behind him was Darth Vader, and I thought that was just brilliant. So as always, keep up the great work. Congratulations on branching out to the Sith Disturbers as well. The first episode last week was really, really good. So looking forward to seeing where that show will go as well. Catch you later, boys.
And there goes Ads, famous member of the Star Wars Commonwealth. And thank you, sir, for the kind words about Sith Disturbers. And happy Halloween to you too, my friend.
Yep, thanks. So, guys. Thanks, Ads, for the candy. Nice to see you, buddy.
Wouldn't that be something? Get together with all the guys at one point?
It'll probably happen one day.
I got to give him a quick shout out too, because just today we were going back and forth again with the deliberating this mind-blowing pumpkin contest we had going on. But he sends me a pic at the end of the night, or actually it was a video of himself beginning to watch one of my favorite shows of all time, Firefly. Yeah, you're a good man, Ads. You're a good man.
All right, let's break down his questions here. First one, Corey, first up here, your ideal costume. And he didn't specify Star Wars, so if the being the Kool-Aid guy, the Kool-Aid man is your costume of choice, so be it. But go for it. Your best, your favorite, ideal, whatever Halloween costume.
You know, it's kind of, you know, I got to the show notes a bit late, so I had taken the question because it was written in the show notes as Star Wars costume. I brought it up late. That it might necessarily mean that, but anyhow.
Okay, well, let's keep it simple then. Let's keep it to Star Wars.
All right, so I thought the three of us maybe could one day go out as the Max Rebo Band.
Well, wait. Who's going to be who here?
Yeah, you could be Max Rebo, Kyle, if you really want. But that's a lot of equipment to lug around, so.
Well, it is. So who's going to be Droopy McCool?
I like McCool a lot. I can be McCool if you want. James, you want to be Cy Snoodles?
Absolutely. Nothing more I've ever wanted to be, actually.
That would be pretty funny. You know, I can't remember my Halloween costumes as a kid, and I would shudder to look at the costumes, thinking, you know, when I was little, putting them on, oh, this is the best costume ever. And then look back and go, oh, God.
Well, you know what it is as a kid, too, with your imagination. No, you say, oh, I'm going to be this year, and it looks like this in my head. And then you put it on, you're like, I just want to cry. This is not what I wanted.
Oh, I'm going to rock the boat, but I had really kick-ass costumes. I had this aunt who could sew, and whatever me and my brother dreamt up, she came up with something that looked amazing. Like headgear. I remember my brother one year wanted to be a reindeer, and like the antlers she came up with were like impressive. Always a full body suit. Back to topic related, my parents, I remember when I was a kid, like 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, every year they'd go to Halloween parties, and they'd, for a good stretch of years, half a decade or more, they'd always go as Obi-Wan Kenobi and Darth Vader. My mom's favorite character was Darth Vader, so she'd always go as Vader. She had like a helmet, which was pretty easy, and she'd wear a black cape. It was awesome. And my dad had this brown like monk's robe, which you just put over your head and you look like Obi-Wan Kenobi. That's easy. But he also, and these, you didn't have these in 80, whatever, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He had a lightsaber, man, that he made himself. He took like a mag flashlight and a ping pong ball, and like taped like plastic tubing from the end of the flashlight to the sort of like to the ping pong ball. Anyways, it looked really cool and was really badass. I remember those costumes really well.
Dude, your dad's my new hero.
I should get him to dig out some pictures. It was really, I remember it being pretty cool.
That is so cool, man.
Yeah, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Well, you know what I remember now? It was a party the three of us were at a bar called Annie's.
Oh, dude.
Back in, I think that was 2004, the superhero party that was the brainchild of me and Tony.
It was awesome.
Originally, that was supposed to be at our apartment.
Yeah, that was huge.
That was huge. Yes, we said let's do this at our apartment, and then we realized that okay, no, there's actually turning out to be a lot of people that want to do this.
We can't fit 80 people in our apartment, so let's bring it to Annie's.
Yeah, we asked the manager at the bar, how many people do we need to get to close the bar for the night on was the Friday close to Halloween or the Saturday? And he threw out a number. Okay, we'll do that. And whatever that number was, we hit it because, man, it was packed. And everybody was dressed up as a superhero.
Yep.
It was terrific.
It was really, really good.
What were you
dressed
as, James?
That was the last time I...
What do you think, Corey? I was a bad guy.
I don't want to say Joker. That's just too presumptuous. A bad guy.
No. He wore a mask.
I was wearing a kick-ass mask.
Oh, wow.
It actually was a really good mask. It was one of the better ones for sure at the party.
And a green cape.
Green hood, green cape, metal mask.
Ooh, the Doom, Dr. Von
Doom.
Yeah,
man. Yeah, that was awesome. I had the shoulder. I had the shoulder pads, and I got like a Hulk bodysuit, but I spray painted it silver.
Dude, trust me. I remember. I was at that party. We talked or knew each other then, but I totally remember.
Awesome.
That was almost 10 years ago. You know who? You remember who I was?
That was twelve years ago.
That was more than 10 years ago.
Jesus.
Yeah, that was 2004.
Holy cow.
Yep.
What were you,
and,
Corey?
Actually, James, your wife, I think it's a top three costume of the night. She was Firestar.
Yeah, man, I loved it. It was awesome.
That's awesome. I totally remember her too. You rock.
It's such a simple costume, but she nailed it, and it was probably the most legit looking costume of the night.
Yeah, the mask would go, and she had like the long sort of reddish hair anyways, but the mask, like she managed to get like the perfect, it sounds easy, but like that mask sort of sticks out anyways. The yellow bodysuit and the mask made the costume, and you're right, it was legit.
And my wife, my girlfriend at the time, she dressed up, but she was Batgirl.
Yep.
And she also did a really legit job because she ordered like a black one piece full body length leotard and then sewed her own bat symbol to it and bought separate boots, went out and bought a separate belt.
Oh yeah, man. People went all out. You're right. My lady had a special order her one piece leotard too. And I think everybody went out and bought like some of or all of their costume. They were like elaborate superhero costumes.
Dude, you know what I went out there and bought? I don't know if you remember seeing me there, James. Carl, do you remember what it was?
What you were?
Yeah.
Yeah, you were Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, Corey, I do remember.
Dude, I went out and bought I had the mask, but it was a half mask.
Oh, it was,
my mouth was
it
showing.
It was dope.
So I painted my face, and then I went out to the pet store, and I bought four dog chokers, and I attached them to my jacket everywhere.
Awesome.
No, that was a cool costume.
Yeah.
I was Batman, and you know the key to selling a Batman outfit is to black out your eyes. That's a huge part of selling the whole thing.
I think you're probably right.
You are right. Because I remember seeing you that night, Kyle. You're just at the bar and I came in and you just like nodded to me. I was like, excellent.
So good.
And like that was the last time I got dressed up. And I spent a lot of money on that costume. Like I bought black like winter combat style boots. I bought a whole bunch of separate pieces for that outfit. I spent like $50 on Batman's cowl. It was an expensive thing, and I was online and I had my finger on the buy now button, or the actual finalize the purchase of it. It was like a $1,000 Batman suit. I was right there ready to buy it. And Tony's over my shoulder going, ah, dude, I want you to do it, but I don't want you to do it.
Yeah, no, that's too much.
Tony's costume was awesome, much. Too. He was Gambit. That was super well done.
Yeah, Tony looked dope. Paul, too. Paul Trenier was Logan, was Wolverine. He looked really good.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, he sold. I took my buddy there that night. I convinced him to come because he didn't know anyone there, you know. I was like, come on. And he came as Wolverine, too, but he, like, glued on the sideburns. He lost.
He lost. Christina was Storm. Ah, there were some really dope costumes that night.
Yeah, my girlfriend at the time was Elektra.
Well, some among the dopest were the ladies dressed in their evening wear as Two-Face's companions.
Yeah, that lucky.
Some of those images are NSFW.
Yeah, every once in a while, someone emails me one of those and says, "I still have these," and I go, "Oh, geez."
No, James, you're safe.
Yeah,
for the record, you're safe.
Good, phew.
Yeah, I don't know. As long as I don't really have an ideal costume. If I was to keep it to Star Wars, you know, I would love to dress up as Kylo Ren or Darth Vader, but I don't have the height, so I would always feel inadequate. I'm sure I could scare a lot of small children, but otherwise I'd feel like a fake. So I would just have to revert to, you know, putting together a really good X-wing pilot suit or something super legit, like a really legit full Jedi robe tunic outfit. Because I think at least then you'd be warm if you went out on Halloween night. It's actually going to be quite chilly tomorrow night when we take the kids out. So I would like to be warm. And I think a full Jedi suit affords you that. But moving along, did everybody have their say? Yeah. Anything anybody else want to say there?
You know what? I would do the grown-up version of the guy riding the Tauntaun. You seen the little kid one? So like the full adult version of that would be like super money.
Have you not ever considered going as Gandalf?
I considered it for this year, and then they shaved my beard off my face. But yeah, I considered it pretty strongly for this year. I was going to be a wizard.
Yeah, James, what's the status on that? For out of curiosity, for me and all the listeners, where are you at on the beard status?
Well, in what sense? Like, am I going to grow it back?
Yeah, have you been shaving? Are you not shaving? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I shaved.
We want to know all your personal grooming habits, James. That's what this show is now.
I'll tell you, I haven't really decided, but I shaved for like a week, and then so it's been another week. I have not shaved, and I'll probably grow like a beard out for the winter, and then I'll decide in the spring what's going on.
Interesting.
All right, part two of Ad's question. It's one that's near and dear to my heart. It's something I wanted to talk about on the show some time ago, but we could never really figure out how to do it. Ad's asked us about our favorite Star Wars poster. And it's kind of, we figured in the end we dropped the topic because how do you describe it to somebody who may not know what you're talking about? It would be clumsy to perhaps talk about. But now we've been compelled. So we've put our heads together and figured out exactly what posters are our favorites among the many, many options out there.
Oh, my. Yeah.
Yeah, oh, my, indeed.
Did we up on any, Kyle? Because I narrowed it down to three. I couldn't even pick a favorite. But did we double up on any?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did, for sure.
Yeah.
So, James, I mean, I don't know how the simplest way to tackle this is, but I guess tell us about your favorite Star Wars poster. Well, let's see how this works.
Okay, so like I said, I could not narrow it down to one poster. I picked three after, you know, perusing more than an hour, probably 90 minutes, just looking through and, you know, getting nostalgic and looking up, you know, who made them and who created them. And it really is tough because there are so many good ones. But I picked, I picked one that's brand new. And it's, I couldn't help but say that it's one of my favorites because Ads took as his favorite the episode one poster where Anakin's standing and just all by himself in front of a little hut. And his shadow is casting the shadow of Darth Vader. That might be the best poster in terms of like how I felt when I first saw it. you know, the excitement when the prequels were coming. We didn't know everybody was going to be so divided on them. And the excitement level was super high. We were going to get Vader's backstory, et cetera, et cetera. So since Ads picked that as his favorite, I excluded it from my list. But the one that I picked that's new is similar in a way. And it's the one with the Russian one, with the helmet that's washed up on the beach. And in the back, you've got like the walkers, sort of in the background, and the shadow or the reflection in the water, that the helmet's casting is a rebellion, a rebel,
the rebellion insignia.
Yeah. Symbol. I really like that poster, and sort of for some of the same reasons that I like that Anakin Vader shadow poster. What do you guys think about that one? Is it too new for you guys to crack into your mentionables?
Maybe a little too new to crack into my top three, but it's definitely a top 10. Like, that's a really, really good poster.
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. I loved it too.
Yeah. So then
James, you were also, yeah, go ahead.
So then, it's funny. There's a lot of collage posters. And while one of the other two that I picked is sort of is a collage, I was drawn to like the simpler posters. The one with the rebel helmet and the one for Jedi with did you look up the name of it, Kyle?
Yeah, that's so if anybody's Googling along here trying to think what we're talking about, it's the Style A theatrical one sheet.
Style
for
A
Return of the Jedi. Theatrical.
Okay.
And that's the one with just the lightsaber basically taking up center stage on the poster, right?
Correct.
Yeah,
that's from the re-release, right, Kyle? Like, that's the VHS that I got you.
No. This was the first Jedi poster. This is the one that appeared in theaters.
With the hand. Like, it's just a saber, right?
Yeah.
It's a funny story that the two hands are George Lucas's hands.
Oh, awesome. You know, now that you say that, I think I've heard that before.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, I own this book. Nobody knows, really. It's the Star Wars poster book written by Steve Sansweet and Pete Vilmer. And it is an amazing book. It is so good. I'm always catching myself flipping through this thing, looking at the different styles and from different eras. And there's some wacky stuff in this book. Crazy that you wouldn't even recognize it as Star Wars. I'm telling you, it's there's some weird stuff here. But yeah, that one is the theatrical one sheet from Jedi. And it had the blue lightsaber back when Luke's lightsaber in Jedi was supposed to be blue. And then when they shot the scenes
in the desert,
out in the Dune Sea, they realized they couldn't capture the blue lightsaber against the blue sky, so they just switched it to green, and that's how that came about. But yeah, I had that one on my wall as a teenager. You remember at John Abbott, where we went to school, once a semester, maybe once a year, this gigantic, one of the big gathering areas at the school would just fill up with this poster vendor. And there were just thousands of posters up for sale. And this was at the time of the special editions coming back into the theaters. And the whole wave of Star Wars nostalgia was coming back, washing over us again. And so I went nuts. And he had one of each. And I bought, that was the version of Jedi I bought. And it's not my favorite, but I had to have one of each. so that ended up being on my wall for several years thereafter.
I remember that.
Yeah, there's something Excalibur-esque about the way the saber's being held, and I don't know. I think something about when that movie came out, like
83.
Not, you know, eight. Was I eight? So just like everything was so magical and
yeah.
everything about it.
That's the word.
Yeah,
man.
That poster for me looks magical. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, go ahead, Kurt. Kyle.
Well, you'll also notice that at the top of the lightsaber, there's sort of like the shape of a cross, which was also intentional because of the religious overtones of the movie. So the artist wanted to hint at that as well.
Wow.
Yeah, which I thought was interesting.
You got the stars and the planets sort of in the background. It's a simple but really cool poster. And then moving on to the third one I picked, since I was supposed to pick one and I'm taking up a lot of time. And this one's been sort of... this image has been sort of redone in many posters, but it's the classic one where you know, Luke doesn't even look like Mark Hamill, and Leia doesn't really look like Carrie Fisher, but he's got his hands over his head in a very like sort of novel cover hero kind of way. And she's leaning up against his leg, like on the cover of the Vacation movies, where she's like leaning up against Chevy Chase. And there's Vader's helmet in the background. Did you look up what that one's called for anyone who's listening?
Yeah, that's the Hildebrandt theatrical quad.
It is just so classic. I had to put it on my list.
Yeah, and it's sort of a take on the Tom Jung. I can't remember. I don't know how his name is pronounced. But since I'm mentioning it, my favorite is sort of the predecessor of that. Not that it's that much older, but it's a different color palette in a different style. But it's this basically the same image where you have Luke with his shirt open. He looks like He-Man.
Yeah, he does look like
Leia
He-Man.
Looks like something out of a SI calendar. But it's easily my favorite Star Wars poster. No, hands down.
Yeah, it's got it all. I mean, it's just so cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that you just don't see anymore. And other than that, my favorite was the Empire Strikes Back Style A theatrical one sheet. I think that's on Corey's list as well.
Oh yeah, that was on my short list too, for sure.
Just funny because you would never think that a movie with a Tauntaun as a focal point would end up being like such a favorite. But again, it's such a great poster. Like that is the one you're talking about, right, Corey?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. Like, because I said the same thing. I'm like, do I really want to choose this one? There's a Tauntaun at this focal point of this thing, but yeah, it's just
Corey. I knew you'd pick this one because of the like romantic dip kiss, and you're such a sappy romantic. I knew you would pick this poster.
You know what's funny too? Because I knew one of you would say that. But what I really like is it's almost like it's a picture that done as a painting, you know? Like I really love that. It just gives it, again, that magic, like that, the tone of the movie.
Well,
it fits, you know? I mean,
it's harkening back to a bygone era of Hollywood. Like when movies back then, they painted their movie posters back then. It was an intentional move by Lucas to evoke that those images.
I want them to do that with some new stuff. The new stuff just looks too 21st century. Like, I really want them to touch back on the old Buck Rogers theme they had, kind of, in a way, you know?
I think it would boil down to expense, unfortunately.
Expense?
I know they have all the money in the world.
I don't think it's expense. I think it's more like just people these days don't appreciate that kind of thing, you know?
Oh, I think they would find that if they did something like that now, people would lap it up.
No, I don't know. I think I'm with Corey on this. I think they're worried about hooking new viewers. They've already got you hooked. So when they're making posters, they're thinking about what do the kids like.
Yeah, it's just a sign of the time.
Yeah, that's true.
Sadly.
All right, well.
Anything McQuarrie-esque to me, like all the stuff like pre A New Hope, like the stuff that was coming out is just so neat too. Like just really cool to look at.
Most of them are
like a $200 box set on Amazon.
I'm surprised
of all McQuarrie stuff. It's crazy how gorgeous that set is.
I'm surprised nobody picked the Revenge of the Jedi poster, which is, you know, super cool.
I have the T-shirt.
Yeah, it's an awesome. What about this? Any posters like besides the new ones that we all sort of agree that we mostly don't like? Any of the original posters that you really don't like? There's one every time I see it that makes me laugh.
Well, looking through this book, I mean, yeah, there's all kinds. There's some weird European ones. There's one from Italy. It's just so bizarre. It's colored in a way where Luke's white robes from A New Hope are pink. His skin is orange, like Donald Trump orange. Carrie Fisher is blue. It's so strange. It's so poorly done.
No, I meant more like from the classic ones. You know the, I think it's Empire. I'm pretty sure it is. There's like an upskirt Vader one.
yeah, I think I know which one you're talking about. That could be the B style theatrical one sheet.
It's just such a weird angle. He's like stepping over, and it's like, it's just such a, an, a non-intimidating pose that they have him in. It's weird. It's an upskirt, I'm telling you.
Yeah, there's some bizarre ones. I don't have them anymore. I have nothing on my walls. Like, we've been in this house for closing on 3 years, and we've not hung anything on our walls. It's, people would think we're like sterile people. But I still have the Fox Home Video One Last Time, which was sort of like the half of Vader's face with the X-Wing chasing the TIE. That's kind of classic to me now. And I also have the Yoda campaign for the Attack of the Clones on IMAX, which I still love.
Yeah, it's amazing. What about, remember, Kyle, we hounded the guy, I think the name of the shop was Video Super Schwa. And it was, we hounded this guy, or you hounded him anyhow, and you got the one for the THX release, the stand-up cardboard one.
No, that was from a friend of mine who was moving out. He scored it from a local video store, and instead of throwing it in the trash, he's like, can I have that? He said, sure. And then he moved out of his apartment, and that was my prize for helping him move. He said, I don't want to take this with me to another move. So that thing is actually worth a lot of money now, and I just tossed it. It just got beat up too much.
Oh, wow.
And,
I was hoping you still had
that. Out to the trash it went.
That sucks.
No, that's gone. And I'll, before we move on, I will just say that I'll give the prequels a little bit of love. The Attack of the Clones, Drew Struzan. I love that poster. I think that is the best of the three prequel posters.
Are you going to post these tomorrow?
No. Come on.
Just choose one of each. Just boom, boom, boom. Three pictures. Bang.
Why don't you do it?
I don't have a blog.
There's an idea.
I don't have a blog or a website, so I've got a...
Well, you have a Twitter.
Yeah. Okay. Send it to you. You put it on your blog. I'll retweet it on Twitter.
We'll see about that. We'll see about that. Well, thank you, ads. There's some mileage out of a ads edition. What do you think about that?
I liked it. That good Halloween content there.
Happy Halloween. I love this guy. Ads is the best.
And you're the worst.
You're the worst, Corey. The worst. You guys remember the Garfield Halloween special where he's like, Halloween's my middle name. Gar Halloween Field.
Dude, I swear to God, I watched that this week with my son. I have the holiday special. I bought it at Walmart for like $2 or something. It's got like all
it
the holiday specials.
It is by far
specials.
My favorite Halloween special for sure.
My first nightmares came from this. The first memorable nightmare came from this movie. And I watched it again last week and I was like, wow, now I know why.
Was it like, the Edgar Allan Poe part?
Well, it's the guy at the end, the old man at the end. He starts talking to him. And then the ghost, my dream was of the ghost pirate ship coming, but it's so well done with them hiding in the cupboard. Oh, man. Doesn't get old.
Yeah. No, it's good.
All right. Well, thanks once again, ads. And keep it coming. Long live the Commonwealth, as our listeners would say. And now we're going to hear from another knight of the Commonwealth who chimes in this week, the great Connor. Says, hello, Connor here, and I'm putting the same question as I put to the Talk Star Wars guys. Do you think Yoda brought down Luke's X-Wing on Dagobah? I love the idea of him standing planetside, arms outstretched, dropping the ship just within walking distance of his little onion hut to save him the long walk to Luke. When his training is done, get his own ship out, he can, he'd say. Anyway, love to hear what you fine gentlemen have to say on this. Thanks, Connor. Loving the show you put together each week. May the Force be with you always. Long live the Commonwealth. Well, may the Force be with you, Connor. Thanks for the question. And James, it's something I never considered. What do you think? Did Yoda dump Luke in the swamp on purpose?
Fortunately, thanks to that Commonwealth that Connor mentioned. Hey, Connor, thanks for the question. I listened to the boys tackle this. And so I've thought about it a little bit and have a little insight that I wouldn't have had. I think it's an awesome theory, like it's an awesome idea, and it makes a lot of sense. And to go back and retell it, it only makes sense to retcon it so that it is Yoda who brought down the ship. Because and we'll talk about this for a couple of reasons, but think about it. Like Connor says, the ship crashes within walking distance of where Yoda is on a planet, even a small planet.
Yeah, like it's too convenient, right? He just happens to crash right where he needs to be.
Right. So now, obviously, the practical reason is storytelling. You're telling a movie, so he crashes, and then you don't have time to tell an extra hour of movie where he finds him on the planet, so he just crashes next to him. Practically, that's why. But to
or as Corey would say, it's the will of the Force, man.
Well, I mean, Yoda's using the will of the Force, maybe only, more directly.
That's the only other way to look at it, though. Not that I'm choosing that yet, but it's true. It's versus, you know?
Yeah, okay. You can always use the will of the Force. That's always a possibility. But I like this better. And although I know there's other reasons for Luke to lose his equipment, you could say that, a Jedi Force-led tractor beam might explain the difficulties he was having before he crashed too, right?
All his scopes go dead and he can't see a thing.
Yeah.
Which is sort of strange, right? Like, what Dagobah on its own before Yoda got there was sort of a weird Force-laden place. So it could have been, like, whatever Force powers. I'm not going to say the planet has Force powers, but whatever specter of the Force is sort of imbued in Dagobah, that could have knocked out his scopes, and then Yoda took it from there.
Right, and he says at some point in the movie, he says, watching you for a long time I have been, or, you know, that's paraphrasing again, but, so if he's able to watch Luke from far away and knows he's coming to see him, why not sort of stand outside and try to grab the X-Wing and land it close to your hut? It just makes a lot of sense for that to be the official reason it happened.
Yeah, absolutely. I never considered it. I just kind of, it was what it was, right? Like he just somehow conveniently splashed down in a puddle that just so happened to save his life. Corey, do you agree? Is it worthwhile retcon?
Guys, like you took the words right in my mouth, pretty much, James. Like, and first of all, now we know why Connor isn't a member of the Commonwealth for pointing out things like this, or a Knight of the Commonwealth. But yeah, I mean, we know for certain that Yoda chooses this planet to get away from. Just hide out. Like, when Luke's coming into atmosphere, he's like, my readings, it's teeming with life, this planet. So there's, no one's going to find Yoda there. There's billions of life forms. Like, Luke says it himself. So no one's going to, the Empire's not going to find him there, no matter what you do. So I could see it both ways. I could see Luke kind of coming into atmosphere and just starting to lose control. Yoda sensing that this is the actual moment it's happening and helps to guide the ship to where it needs to be. Because, frankly, if you really think about it, the swamp is the safest place for that ship at that time. You're not going to go crashing into the middle of a forest, right? You're going to damage the ship. So,
yeah, there wasn't really much, unless he landed right on the spot where Yoda deposited the ship after yanking it out. Unless Luke was to land right safely in that spot, the only place is the water.
Like, where Connor kind of makes the jump, or the leap here, is saying, is doing this all intentionally for the sake of having him, at the end of his training, get the ship out of the swamp by himself. Now, that's really the essence of what I'm... So, that I'm kind of struggling with. I don't know if it's just Yoda kind of trying to help him, or is it actually Yoda saying, okay, like... But I really do see it more as just him helping him guide the ship in. I think his sensors do go out naturally, because just the system is just such a messed up place, and it's where Yoda again chooses to hide. Like, I don't think ships.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I think definitely, Corey. I think you're right in that they didn't mean for that. I don't think anybody meant for this to be the official reason that the ship crashed there when they shot it. But I do think if you retcon it that way, then with the ease that Yoda removed the ship from the swamp, it's easy to just say, yeah, he did that on purpose because powerful Jedi's, you know, that's no big deal. And when Luke was ready, he'd be able to do it himself. And if he wasn't ready, I'll just yank it out for him. Because, like, yeah, he was a bit tired after, but, like, you know, he basically looked like he ran a 100-yard dash for you or I. Like, it wasn't a big deal for him to lift that thing out of the swamp.
No.
So if you do retcon it so that Yoda tugged him down out of orbit and knocked out his system and crashed him, then you could just continue that right along to say, And in the end, he put it in the swamp instead of, you know, somewhere else because he knew it was a good way to train Luke. You don't have to do that, but you could easily do it. It's not a far stretch.
It's not, but I see it more being as the sense that, like, you know, Yoda's just such a good dude. I don't think he'd do that. Like, I think he'd be like, okay, the moment's happening. Let's help him. Like, kind of just guide the ship toward him because he's kind of, it's foggy for, like, quite a bit. Like, he probably traveled through atmosphere quite, he can travel pretty far, you know, like, in a spaceship like that, I guess. So, I don't know. I definitely see Yoda having helped him and using that swamp as, again, a test, like Connor mentioned. But I don't think the test was actually intentional. I think it's all a matter of circumstance. And that swamp being the safest place. Maybe Yoda had some time to think about it prior, you know, but...
Yeah, fair enough.
It's one of those things that they don't have to explain either. Like, I think it's just fine letting us talk about it in this way because it's inconsequential one way or the other. And that we can, it's one of those things that you can let fans come to their own conclusions and everybody will get along just fine.
That's an interesting question, yeah. Though, honestly, because, like, again, I've never heard the question posed prior.
No, it really is. And I think we're all kind of on the same page. Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. Like, I don't think they hinted at that at all on screen, but it makes sense in retrospect that, yeah, it really, it's very practical for Yoda to have done that.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Thank you, Connor.
Great question.
Nice to hear from you, buddy.
Terrific.
Thank you for your support, sir. And we'll move on to Josiah. And let's have some fun with this one, because I think this one could end up being a show on its own if we really wanted it to. But instead, let's have some fun with it. So Josiah says, "Hey, guys, got a big question for you all this week that I'd love to hear you hear discussed. Okay, let's say Earth existed in Star Wars. If Thrawn were to study our culture, art, religion, what would he learn and what would be our flaw?" And so I had to reach out to Josiah after that, getting in that question. I said, are you talking about just us as people who live in the Western world? Or are you talking global as an entire human species? And for simplicity's sake, we'll keep it to our sort of Western Christian dominated culture. Otherwise, this will take all night and I don't have all night. So... Corey, what would Thrawn learn from us?
It makes me think of Star Trek. You know, when they first kind of make that jump to hyperspace or warp speed and some other alien species contacts them? It says, okay, now you guys are, you've evolved enough so that you can know that there's other life forms out there and whatnot. If that's the case, it changes the whole premise. If we know and we have these technologies that these people have, then yeah, like, I think we'd be in a really different place. But if we're just the Earth that we are now and say that Thrawn's observing us from afar and we know nothing of them, but regardless, we're still in that universe, I would pretty much think that he would look at us as ignorant, self-indulgent barbarians.
That's not far too far off from my opinion. James, what do you think?
Well, that makes three of us. I was going to say Thrawn would his report would say something to the effect of Earth is infected with a fungal virus known as the humanoid species, but don't worry, it's about to self-destruct.
Yeah, it's a planet rich with resources. Give these guys another 5 years and the planet will be ours without resistance.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, I had a joke and I said, well, he'd see us celebrating art like macaroni glued to paper plates and think we're all a bunch of imbeciles, or looking at a planet of people who are in dire need of Photoshop lessons and say, no. If this is what these guys consider art, we're just going to either wipe them out and take the planet, or let's just move on to the next system because these guys are absolute turkeys.
No, that's the one thing I think that would be our saving grace is our compassion, our will to love, and our art. I think that's the one thing that he would find most interesting is just the flip side and the positive side of what humans are. I think he would find extremely, extremely interesting. But for the most part, in the grand view, like, yeah, like, we're all kind of like sheep to the slaughter in a way, sadly.
Boy, that got dark.
Yeah. Well, we all said it ourselves, like, ignorant, self-indulgent barbarians. Like, I mean...
Hey, I wasn't so mean. I called us a fungal virus.
Well, if he was to look at religion on our planet, he would just say, well, these guys just constantly go to war for things that may or may not exist. They're absolute fools.
Well, that's why I kind of touched upon the Star Trek thing in the sense that, once they're kind of greeted by it, I think that would change our perspective, basically. If, you know, we're introduced to a whole other galaxy out there where, yeah, there's lots of life out there. Like, you might want to rehash your views on the universe.
Certain people are just, they're unshakable, no matter what you present them with. They will not be swayed.
Oh, it would be the turning point in human civilization, that's for sure.
It probably would be, yep.
Sometimes you just gotta face facts.
No. Willful ignorance is better. All right, well, thank you, Josiah. I think that's... I'm pretty comfortable thinking that's what Thrawn would think. And he would no doubt wipe us out anyway and take our planet for his. Or for the glory of the Emperor.
Yeah, but you'd do it just like you said, Kyle. He would be the architects of their own demise.
And yeah, well, and he'd say, just give these fools a little more time. We don't even have to add any kerosene to the fire. I'm watching, they're doing this presidential election thing now, and it's completely insane. Let's just cool our heels for another couple weeks and see what happens, because the planet might be ours.
Yeah. It's a circus, man.
And there's an episode title for you.
It's a circus, man.
All right. Well, guys, guess what? I think we've reached the finish line here.
Episode
48 of the Tumbling Saber podcast is in the books. Thank you all, one and all, so much for listening this week. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can hit Corey up at Chop Rules with a Z. And you can find Tommy Bombadil 1, that would be James, on Twitter. I'm at Tumbling Saber. Find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all those wonderful places that one day nobody will care about. And if you can, head over to iTunes, drop us a quick review, and help us prop up the show in those iTunes rankings. And until next week, guys, enjoy your weeks. Have some fun on Halloween night. Be safe. And we'll check in with you again in episode 40. Actually, I have to get used to saying this. We will check in again with you coming up later this week in Sith Disturbers Part 2. Number 2. I do have to get used to that now. That's it, guys. Have a good one. We'll talk soon. Bye for now.
Walking away from me. Were you watching me? Was Adventure.